This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I needed only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
Alive and kicking.
With Claire McKenna.
On News Talk.
Now, Natasha Morgan is the co-founder of the charity Feed Our Homeless, and she joins me in studio now. Natasha, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Claire.
So you co-founded this charity in Finglas in Dublin 10 years ago. So what led to the setup of it in the first place?
Well, we set up in 2017 and we had nothing. So we actually weren't based in Finglas at the time. We had no premises, we'd no car, we'd no vans. A group of people just came together, and at that time we thought there was a homeless crisis. You know, we had back then around 7,000 people homeless, and, you know, we seen the need. There were, you know, people sleeping rough, and there was no access to food at the time. So we set up a soup kitchen, and it evolved from there. It happened organically. One of the volunteers, she had access to a space next to her workplace, and she gave us, you know, access there. We set up a kitchen, and yeah, it's one thing led to another. Someone else donated a van to us, and it evolved over the years. The dynamics changed. You know, homelessness became much more than what you could see on the street. We had clients come to us, or service users come to us, that actually had somewhere to stay but just couldn't afford to put food on their table. We had families coming with kids with lunch boxes that they could take home and, you know, provide food or lunches for kids the next day. We had construction workers coming to us again, you know, providing lunch for them for the next day. And at that time, there was accommodation for homeless families, but there was no food provided. So at that time, they had to leave at 7 a.m. and they couldn't return until 7 p.m. So they had nowhere to prepare food. A lot of them had no family support or, you know, extended family support, friends. Sometimes they weren't even from Dublin. So we kind of filled that gap or that need at that time. But for us, there was so much more that we could do that beyond the food. So sometimes food is not the reason why people are in the situation that they're in. A lot of the time there's so much more to it. So over the years, we knew that we wanted to open up a food bank, especially for those that actually had somewhere to live, somewhere to stay, but just couldn't afford, you know, with the cost of living. So that's when we actually moved out to Finglas. We moved out in 2019, the end of 2019, just before COVID hit, and that's where kind of everything changed for us.
So is that part of empowerment almost, that people aren't just coming in and being handed a hot meal, but they can almost shop, like there's a supermarket shelf there where they can pick their own foods, bring it home and serve it at their own table, and that there's an empowerment in that? Is that why you wanted to provide that shift with the food bank?
Yes, because like that, they had somewhere to cook. They just couldn't afford the food. So the mentality or the rationale behind it was, this is a gap that we need to fill. So we did a little bit of research, and at the time, there was a food bank closing in the Finglas area. So we found a premises, and we decided to open up a food bank there. So again, the services that we provide now, it happened organically, you know, from a client or from a service user requesting something or asking for help. And we thought, okay, there's a niche here, or there's a gap, you know, from, let's say, from an advocacy point of view. So the core of what we do, food, yes. So two main services that we provide is the emergency outreach, which we still cater to homeless individuals. So it operates 7 nights a week. It's on a voluntary capacity. And we will, our main clients are those experiencing rough sleeping. Food is provided, emergency supplies is provided, clothes, sleeping bags, tents if necessary. But the main objective is to find out, why are they on the street in the first place? Is there anything else? Nobody wants to be sleeping on the street. Nobody wants to be living, majority don't want to be living that way, but there's always a reason. So when you get to the core and you have those conversations and relationships are built, they tell you why. A lot of them are coming from the care system. The minute they're 18 years of age, they're put into adult services. Unfortunately, with the crisis, you know, sometimes children are missed, you know, conversations are not had and they're put into inappropriate situations. So therefore, the likes of our service would find out maybe why they're not accessing emergency accommodation, and can we advocate for them with the likes of Dublin City Council or the DRHE, you know, homeless services, and see if we can get them somewhere more appropriate, age appropriate. So some of these kids are only 18, 19 years of age and they're put into accommodation, maybe sharing with somebody who's 40 years of age and maybe 20 years history of incarceration, which is not ideal. You know, so can we advocate for that person? If it's an older person on the street, again, same objective. If it's a couple, you know, can we get them a couple bed? Or so there's so much more. Food is just your conversation starter. It enables us to build relationships. It enables us to build trust with the client, and then we're able to work with them. Again, same with the food bank. Food is your emergency. You know, initially a family will come to us because food is what's needed. But over time, again, relationships are built, trust is built. And they might say to me, Natasha, I'm really struggling with X, whatever that might be. And because we have built up so, again, relationships within the community through, different services, for us, interagency work is so important. There's only so much that we can do. So, you know, I find out what's in the area, what services are in the area. So when a family mentions they're struggling with a particular issue, who do I know? Who can I link them in with? So for us, at this moment in time, because we don't have the funding, because we don't have the professionals within our own service, we outsource. So, you know, who do we know? Through that, through advocating, we were able to support a family for 3 years through an eviction case. We were able to link families into counselling services, into youth clubs, you know, kids into youth clubs. We were able to get transition year students into work placements, permanent work placements, but that all came through a food parcel. So for us, relationships, it's so important, you know, and that's really the core of what we do and why we do it. And I suppose from a personal perspective, I was once that child. You know, I know the importance of somebody believing in you, somebody giving you an opportunity, someone just being there when you had no hope, or, you know, again, you're on the receiving end of a food parcel, you're on the receiving end of, I suppose, a loss of hope, you know, and by that one person or somebody just believing in you, you know, how your life can quickly change.
And what was that turning point for you? What point in life were you at where somebody did believe in you that's led to you now running what you're doing and speaking as you are?
So many. I'm truly, truly blessed with the amount of people that I had. In some way, it's indescribable. You know, I'm originally from the inner city and I'm adopted. So pretty much from birth, somebody gave me an opportunity, and I am where I am today because of that.
Yeah. And you speak with such a positive energy. How do you cope with the enormity of what you're dealing with? And as you said, over the almost 10 years, things have got progressively worse, from, you know, the housing crisis to the cost of living crisis to the homelessness figures. How do you navigate through that and maintain this positive strength?
I suppose if you focus on the grand scheme of things, you know, it can be so overwhelming. At the moment, we have over 17,000 people homeless registered. We have over 5,000 children living in emergency accommodation. But we need to bring it back to and focus to one person at a time and the ripple effect of that. So if you can focus on helping one family, on one child, on... you know, and I've seen it firsthand through the services that we provide through the reintegration program. We work with an addiction service, and we take CE participants who are eligible for CE, and they are seconded to the service. And again, through an interagency approach, you see that person come in completely broke, and you see them then leave, you know, whether it's back to education, whether it's employment, and, you know, you see their journey pretty much from start to finish from a recovery perspective. And again, that's one person. And you look at then what they're doing now and the impact. As I said, it's if we focus on what is really happening at the moment, It's overwhelming. And, you know, if you were to focus on that, you probably would say, well, what's the point? You know, I'm never going to, you know, help 17,000 people again that's registered. There's so many more. There's, you know, you've hidden homeless. You have, you know, that's not including rough sleepers. It's not including women's refuges. It's not including people in the prison. You know, so there's actually so much more than what is registered. But as I said, if you just go back to one person at a time, and just you have to stay positive. There's no way. There's no other way to think, I suppose.
And I don't think people realise the changing face of what it is to be homeless. People go directly to the rough sleepers. And of course, that's part of the issue. But as you said, it's families, it's workers. I remember years ago, I did some soup runs with a charity, and there was a guy knocked on the door of the charity, and he was in full construction gear, and he asked for a sleeping bag. And that just blew my mind, that he had worked a day and was now just going to sleep somewhere. And, you know, he wasn't Dublin born. So where was he going to go? What was he going to do? Did he have any dinner that night? You know, that just really shocked me, that people can be working, can be earning money, and yet won't have anywhere to call their own. I'm following a woman on Instagram, a young single mom. She's getting a lot of traction. And because of that, people are stepping in and helping her, counsellors and whatever are feeling the pressure. But I'm shocked at the quality of the places she's being sent. With three young children, we're talking, you know, not fit for purpose flats that are run down, cramped, cheap, nasty furniture, and a front door that won't lock. I don't think people know the reality of the situation.
Yeah, it's a lot worse than what. As you say, what people realise. And it's only when you either work in this area or you volunteer or somebody highlights the circumstances that you realise how severe it is. And again, I think that people don't realise it's more than just a housing crisis. It's a psychological, it's when you look at the impact from a child's perspective, from development, anything longer, I mean, there's research out there, and anything longer in an institutionalized environment than 6 weeks, any amount of time, but 6 weeks, you know, onwards, you know, has a huge detrimental effect long term for a child, you know, straight into adulthood. So it's more than just given somebody, you know, somewhere to bed down. There's consequences to this. And, you know, there's 2,500 children living in emergency accommodation longer than a year. You know, the impact again of those kids. You know, if you look at the ACEs study, the adverse childhood experience, you know, and it was a study done, you know, a couple of years ago with 17,000 adults, I believe. And again, they focus on... again, they focus on groups of, you know, neglect, and I know we're pushed for time here, but again, if you go back to that, any child that has an homeless accommodation and the impact, I suppose, of that, the stress from families to financial stress, you know, it causes domestic violence, it causes you know, chronic stress. The mother checks out, so they're emotionally neglected sometimes, they're physically neglected sometimes. Just by the environment. So again, going back to what you were saying about that lady, I can't think of her name, but I follow her too. So you can imagine she's not intentionally, but she's not fully present there for those children. Of course, I mean, you see the stress, you know, she's trying to provide for them. She's trying to find them suitable accommodation, safe accommodation. But those kids are feeling that. So who knows in a couple of years' time, you know, where those children are, how that affects the children long term.
And something I always say and live by, yes, we need to push the powers that be to bring in legislative and systemic change to help this, but that's not going to happen overnight. So how can we be part of the change? And that was partly why I wanted to have you on, because I wanted to give, you know, the charity a bit of focus so that people can support you and help you and your team to continue doing the amazing work you're doing, but also to give people a bit of motivation to perhaps get involved in their own communities. And I wanted to ask you about the power of giving back and the power of volunteering and what people can get from that, because it's a huge part of us feeling connected to the world around us, of having, you know, that positive energy that I spoke that you have because of what you do, having a meaning and purpose, but also finding your tribe and like-minded people and feeling that sense of connection.
Everyone, from transition year students who come into us, right up, volunteering is so important. And another reason why I am where I am today is because of giving back. All my life I have done something, what, charitable work, or I've helped in some way, shape or form, whether it was a business or, and it's all through those contacts and connections again that I am where I am today. So I think it's important to not only give back for because you're making a difference, but you don't realise what it does internally until you actually do something for someone else. And by doing that, you actually grow as a person, you know. And I think sometimes as well, you know, we can get so focused and so caught up in our own issues, you know, but it's only when you help somebody else, or that you volunteer, you know, whether it's a children's charity or, you know, homeless or elderly, that you realise sometimes how selfish we can be. And, you know, we get so caught up in our own little world that we forget other people have it so much worse than what we do. And it brings it back to gratitude, you know, and how grateful we are. Somebody is always worse off than us, you know. But again, it's like the COVID times, you know, we say, oh, we couldn't get our nails done and we couldn't get our hair done and we couldn't. When we look at the homeless, you know, who had to stay out, you know, there was no accommodation for them. There was no food. Everything that they relied on was closed. You know, people weren't in town. You know, the likes of, you know, hand sanitize, you know, make sure your hands are always sanitized. They didn't have that. You know, they didn't have access to that. Toilets, women, you know, time of the month. Where were they supposed? There was no showers. There was no. So again, it was only by volunteering and being exposed to all those scenarios, let's say, that you actually realised how blessed you were. So I think it's important to give back. And it's an awareness as well, because sometimes what you think, I have volunteers come out all the time on the emergency outreach, and they they go out, but they have a perception. We all do. We all have some sort of a judgment, even though we say, oh, we're not judgmental. You always have some perception in your head. And they go out and they come back and it's completely different to what they thought it would be. You know, again, you hear sometimes is, oh, you know, social welfare, whoever's not, you know, people who are on social welfare, oh, you know, and then you have workers, oh, sure, they're all lazy. They're all, you know, you have a perception of people accessing social welfare. It's not always black and white. And it's only when you really come out and you volunteer, especially I can only speak from you know, for our service, let's say, from a homeless perspective, you hear the challenges firsthand. You see the trauma. You learn to separate the behaviour from the person. So I think sometimes we forget that as well. You know, all we focus on is the behaviour. We focus on, you know, antisocial behaviour, but we don't really kind of take a step back and say, again, I'm not condoning the behaviour. The behaviour is one thing, but it's really delving into why a person does what they do, you know, where are they coming from, and understanding the impact of trauma and understanding the impact of poverty and understanding the impact of, you know, already being a statistic, you know, when you're born. And that's what I was, you know, yeah. Coming from the inner city, you're already a statistic. Your life is already mapped out for you. You're nearly, you know, they're nearly, you know, mapping you out, saying your life is going to go one way. But it's, yeah.
Yeah, and having empathy. Yes. And that's what you learn. Well, it's incredible work that you do, Natasha. Where can people find out more?
So we are on all social media. So it's Feed Our Homeless, or we are based in the Jamestown Business Park in Finglas. So you can pop into us, or you can contact us on email. But social media is probably the best.
Well, Natasha Morgan, thank you for doing what you do, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.